Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good day, good week, good month, good year to you. I'm Bishop Randy Dean with you for another episode of Alive to Love. I'm the No BS Bishop. I am convinced all lesser values devolve into BS, so I'm a No BS Bishop. I'm here to lead you, teach you, pull you, give you a little push, whatever I can do to motivate all of you listening and tuning in, which, by the way, I'm quite honored and pleased to say there are people who listen. That makes me happy. I smile all the way from ear to ear and down to my toes when I hear people say, hey, I listened to you the other day. So I'm here to lead you and teach you and train you in any way I can toward the one credible value of the human existence, and that is love. Some folks have a mistaken notion that love is a soft core issue. It's an easy peasy thing. You just get up in the morning and you automatically love. I beg to differ. Love is something we grow into, we learn. Yes, we come into this world with love down in the soul of that little baby that comes out crying for mama. But that cry is a cry for love, and that cry becomes a launching pad for learning a lifelong set of skills that will be learned in love. So today, we're going to talk about your definitions and your deficits of love. It's important to know we all live with both of those qualities. We have definitions that are serving us well, and we have some definitions that don't serve us so well. We also have deficits. I have a teaching on this, as you can well imagine, that I've given in person in a couple of venues. And I want folks to get in touch with their deficits of love. I want them to see where you've been denied or betrayed in your love. So those become deficits. Or in your formative years as a young person growing up, how the deficits were are and still are affecting you all through life. I mean, seriously, from the time you're 8 hours old to the day you're 80 years old, those deficits can linger and create a great amount of frustration and even potential serious misery if it's not looked at carefully. But now today I want to introduce something to you at the beginning of the broadcast that I've said before in different ways, but I want to put it in almost like if you go to church and you do the Apostles' Creed. I want you to hear something that I want us to have as our love creed, all right? This is my love creed. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. Here's what I'd like to encourage you to do. If you can, handwrite this. We're going to go through it slowly in a moment. And I would like to give it to you today, kind of like I do when I do marriages, and I give couples their vows, and I always tell the bride and groom, I'm going to give them to you in small sound bites so you can repeat it easily. You don't have to have this memorized unless you'd want to, but I'm going to give it to you in sound bites. So when I do that at a wedding altar, I find that brides and grooms will stumble through it, but they usually grab it on some level. So I'm going to ask you to follow along with me. I'm going to give this to you in some sound bites, and I'd like for you to say it out loud if you're so inclined, if you're in a place where you can, and to make it your own on some level. If you want to rearrange the words, you've done me no harm, but if you would just use this as a good outline upon which you can hang your own thoughts. So here's my creed of love. And here it is in sound bites. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I'm unavailable for anything less than love. So let me read it through solidly one more time and see if you can catch the rhythm of it. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I'm unavailable for anything less than love. That's our love creed, and I want to offer that to you every time we get together here for the No BS Bishop Alive to Love, and we'll get that out to you in some, maybe some form or another. I can, if you send me your address, I could get that to you and in a card form, something you could keep in your pocket, in your briefcase, in your purse, in your wallet, maybe put it on your bathroom mirror. Perhaps you want to put it in a place in your car where you can readily see it and repeat it. That's a creed I think would serve us all well. So today's topic, definitions and deficits of love. Our definitions of love will drive how we seek to express love, obviously. If my definition of love is a soft, soapy, easy-peasy thing, well, then my love's going to be a soft, soapy, easy-peasy thing. But if my definition of love carries with it the understanding that everything in life is some form or another a demand for me to love more deeply, more profoundly. I say here often, I'm no perfectionist at love, but I am a practitioner of love. I'm on a journey. I am not here to tell you what is completely finished in my life because I'm still breathing. Long as you got air in your lungs and a heartbeat, you are on earth to learn to love, and that's me. I'm here to learn to love. But if my definitions don't allow for some learning, if my definitions are simply they're just tissue thin. They're not deep enough to motivate me to learn, to read, to search, to give myself to some education going forward in this life. So my definitions of love are going to matter. We all learn our definitions of love, and as I'll say in the second half of today's broadcast, in our early days as children, we gain deficits of love because early on we see love demonstrated in awkward ways or clumsy ways, and sometimes that's at best. And at worst, we see love defined for us as something abusive. For instance, early in my life, I remember hearing often, "Oh, if I didn't love you, I wouldn't tease you so much." So in my little mind, I thought, well, I wish you wouldn't love me so much because you constantly tease me. You're constantly badgering me. You're constantly egging me on. I had to learn as I grew that that was a terrible definition of love, which created a deficit. Teasing is not an expression of love. Teasing is an expression either in some small way or some great way of being a bully. Teasing can become this opportunity to one-up somebody constantly, and that's not love. So in your definition of love, if teasing is in the factory, let's open the factory door and kick that sucker out. But that's just one example. Definitions of love can also come from seeing parents who didn't know how to say adequately and routinely, "I love you," or parents that were in some form or another constantly on edge with each other. Those definitions set us up for moving through life with that image in mind, with that definition in mind, that circumference in mind. Sometimes parents are just quiet and cold, and then we start forming, as we watch that, we start forming a quiet and cold idea that love is quiet and cold. I refute that myself. Love is not quiet and cold. Real love that is love is hot, and it's beautifully loud. It allows itself to be heard and expressed. But that's again, those are our definitions of love. I remember as a young lad thinking that love that came from teachers was just a teacher who was being harsh with me. So I had a few teachers that their only method of education was being harsh, was being demeaning or pushing hard. So in my mind, that's what love was. I didn't quite put it as succinctly as I just did for you. But in my little mind, love started looking like being harsh. But then I met a few other teachers who lived a different style of education, who had a real hands-on in a good way, looking to really engage my thoughts, to ask me questions as opposed to just pounding me for answers, to ask questions in a way that led me to the answers rather than forcing some kind of memorized list. I found a love for education because I found definitions of love in a few teachers. So if you're out there and you're a teacher on some level, whether in public education, secondary education, perhaps you're a homeschool mom, homeschool dad, maybe you're a daycare director, look at education as a possibility, as the potential of the definition of love. And when you define love well, when you define love in means that suggests that you have a responsibility with a life in front of you to form and shape the rest of their life toward love, oh my, what a powerful, what a wonderful opportunity. So in our definitions of love, ask yourself, every day, how am I living by definitions of love? How am I living by healthy definitions? What definitions do I have? I would also offer to you, it's important to write down, I do, because I'm the No BS Bishop Alive to Love. I write down what I see as definitions for love. I believe in education, as I just said a moment ago. Listen, life is an entire scope of education. You either live in a lifelong education or you're living some kind of arrested development. I propose that from cradle to grave, we have opportunity to learn. We can educate. It's not going to kill you to learn something. I would propose that some of the things that you know are in the way of what you need to know. I've discovered much of what I knew was in the way of what I needed to know. It was, you know, small little ideas that were outgrowing the culture I was living in, small ideas that were just growing dusty and stale. And when life came along and knocked on my door and asked me some questions about what I felt about life, I had to answer with some of my stale definitions, and I discovered, oh my, I still need to educate myself. I still need to pay attention. I still need to read. I still need to research. I still need to find out something I didn't know before. So those definitions are important. Knowing what they are, writing them down, journaling them in some form or another. You don't have to keep a daily journal, but I would recommend some kind of writing of your thoughts and your feelings and your definitions, especially of love, because journaling becomes a process by which you fine-tune your own thoughts, you fine-tune your own feelings, rather than just feeling a feeling and letting it fly away, or rather than thinking a thought and letting it fly away. Capture that. Capture those thoughts and feelings and put them down as definitions. I think you will find that you have definitions that are a little too shallow to carry you into the best days of your life. All right, so that's a small summary of our definitions of love. Get some good definitions that you can wrap your hands around and your heart and mind around so you can move forward. Why? Because we all have deficits in our love. Every one of us are experiencing some level of a love deficit. I would suggest that love deficits have to do with something that was withheld from you, whether intentionally or by accident, more often by accident than by intention. I don't think there are very many people who are on this earth for the expressed purpose to withhold love with full intention. I think they exist. Yes, I do. But I also know by a greater, far more huge majority, by the preponderance of human experience, most all humans are accidentally creating deficits because most humans want to love, want to give love, want to receive love, and we all instinctively know something's got to be done about love. so that love isn't just a deficit, but that love is a growing and beautiful monument in life. I want to talk again here. I've done this some months ago. I want to talk again about how grief can cause some deficits in our love life if we don't manage grief well. Many of you will know these five stages of grief. Some of you may not have heard them before, but here they are. When you lose someone, now it could be to death as the most extreme loss, or it can be the loss of a relationship. It could be the loss even of a pet. It can be the loss of friendships. It can be the loss of a job. There are many losses, the worst being the death of someone that was close to you in life. But then there are many other deaths that come our way. And when we have a death, when we have a loss of that nature, we go through five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So let's go through that quickly. Denial, when we lose a loved one, denial can be the first reaction. I've had a few of those calls in my life when my father died and when I watched my mother die. There's something in the human condition that says, no, this can't be. Denial is the first stage of grief. It in some level, we just don't want to believe it. Now that, again, that's the extreme level of loss, but even in the loss of a job or the loss of a relationship, when we first see the death of that relationship or the death of a career or job, we just want to go into denial and act as if that didn't just happen. No, not really. I misunderstood. So after that first stage of grieving, we go to the next, and that's anger. Anger is a legitimate expression of grief. You can rage about some kind of loss. I remember when my father died, after denial, I went into some levels of anger, went through some various levels of anger because I felt like the hospital fumbled the ball medically for my dad. I just couldn't accept it, first of all, in denial. But then after I got through some denial, then I started asking questions of medical staff. And I heard from a former medical director of that particular hospital that fed my anger. Well, and so on and on it goes. And I think many of you have stories that are similar. But then we go from denial to anger to bargaining. So in bargaining, that's where we say, okay, all right. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to figure this out. But first, I've got to have X, Y, and Z. And now I want you to apply that in your own life, whether it's a loss of a human being or a pet to death, or maybe it's a loss of a project or just significant somebody, something in your life. We go through bargaining. We try to bargain our way back into a relationship. We try to bargain our way codependently back into a job. And in that level of grief, we need to recognize that if we make too many decisions at that level, we're going to hurt ourselves ongoing. The fourth stage of grief is depression. And again, depression is something that comes in different levels and in different forms. For some, depression is just sitting quietly and in a sullen way where I just don't want to interact with people. I just don't want to see people. I don't want to do anything. That's perhaps the most innocent side of depression. The worst side of depression can be self-destructive behavior. It can be behavior that leads you to make really bad decisions going forward in life. I would recommend that if you feel depressed, if you feel the loss of joy and you just can't find a way to get it back, please, 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 please talk to somebody who has the ability to pull you out of that funk. I know from first-hand experience, I've been diagnosed clinically depressed some years ago, and I had to talk to a counselor, I had to talk to my medical doctor, and then I finally had to get a prescription, which carried me through and got me from A to Z through that process of depression, and I had to learn better ways of thinking, better ways of living, so that I could fend off depression going forward. I'm suggesting to you that if you feel depressed, and it's ongoing, everybody has a little depression every day, but we don't have to live with it or make it a lifestyle. Depression as a lifestyle is something you ought to seek help for. Talk to somebody. Find me. I'll talk to you, and we'll see how to get you forward in life out of that stage of grief which is depression. And the fifth stage of grief is acceptance. Now remember, I'm talking about our love deficits. And love deficits happen when we are walking through grief. And we're having to manage our grief well. Acceptance is, I think, the crown jewel of grief. Because at that point, you're ready to manage your life and to move yourself toward something more than deficit, something that was lost. Now we're going to gain. But you have to understand in your grieving of the loss of love that in your acceptance stage, there are stages in the acceptance. I hate to make this too complicated, but I hope I made sense there. When you reach the acceptance stage in grief, then there are levels of acceptance moving forward. So it's moment by moment, learning to accept the loss of something, and then moment by moment, forgiving, moment by moment, allowing yourself to feel just a little bit disappointment, moment by moment, then making a decision to hope again, making moment by moment the opportunity for yourself to explore a new relationship, a new connection, a new hobby, a new something, a new book you want to read. But whatever you do, don't live in the deficit forever. Because to live in the deficit forever is to lose the potential of moving forward in love. So today I'm talking about the definitions and the deficits of love. I've been a little bit, a little bit clinical to this point. Again, let me move from the clinical to the personal. I've shared this story with you in the past, and I want to offer it to you as I come in for a landing for today's episode. I've told this story about how when I was 18 years of age, 18, 19, my father fell desperately ill and ended up in the hospital. I was far away at college. I was notified I needed to come home quickly because the family felt Dad might be near death. So I raced home. I borrowed money to get an airplane ticket, got home, and I came home to see my dad. During that time of my dad's recuperation, we were busy at home taking care of stuff that needed to be cared for in my dad's absence. And it came to me through, I believe it was my mother. My mother came to me and said, "Hey, your dad wants to see you at the hospital." I said, "Okay, we'll be going up there later." And then she said, "No, your dad wants to see you alone." Well, that alarmed me. I didn't know my dad that way. We had never had this kind of one-on-one relationship. So for Dad to call for me to come up to the hospital as he was getting better and it was getting clear that he was going to make it from the hospital and from his sickness, I worried about that call from Dad. Well, anyway, I did go up to see my dad in the hospital some part of that day later. And when I walked in, he seemed a little nervous himself. And to summarize what happened there was he called me to his bedside. And he said, "Randy, I just want you to know I've come to some understanding about myself. And the first thing is, I've never really told you how proud of you I am." Well, of course, that stunned me because my dad and I did not have that kind of one-on-one relationship. And then he said words that have forever changed my life. And these words were these. He said, "I also realize that up till now, I've never said to you specifically, I love you." Now, folks, if you could somehow slide into my shoes in that moment as an 18, 19-year-old young punk boy, I think you might have a grasp that I was in shock. I knew what he said was true, though I didn't know it on a very clear level right up front. I didn't know just how true that was. I hope that makes sense. When he said it, I knew. But when he said it, I also knew what I didn't know. And for a moment, I felt like I was leaving my body. It was astonishing. The words were near crippling in a good way for me. I couldn't quite keep my composure. And so I heard him. I think, I hope, I believe I said, "Dad, I love you too." But all I know is that when he said those three most magical words, my life changed. So let me close today's No BS Bishop with the exercises we do every time. I'm going to reverse the order. And first of all, I want to suggest to you that you should say to somebody eye to eye with real intention, "I love you." There are people in your life, people in your proximity that may have never heard it quite that way. And if they have, they haven't heard it lately. So surprise somebody. If you're so inclined, yeah, it'll be awkward and weird. I know, I get it. I was feeling awkward and weird in my dad's hospital room that day, but I want to challenge you to go ahead and risk the awkwardness and the weirdness and just say to somebody, I love you. Make eye contact, slow the words down, and have your full thoughts engaged in saying it. It's life-changing. All right, and to the last part of what we'll do here, which is a bit of a change from our venue normally here, I believe in breathing. Yes, I do. I'm a radical like that. Breathing's good for the human soul. And breathing, I think, is very much an exercise of experiencing God. Jesus said the Holy Spirit is like the wind. You don't know where the Holy Spirit comes from, where the Holy Spirit's going. He said it's like the breeze that blows across your face. So on the count of three, I want you to flatten your feet. And then on the count of three, I want you to take the deepest breath you know how to take. You ready? One, two, three. Breathe in. And hold it. Now breathe out. I would suggest to you that if you can do that for 5 minutes every day, you're going to lower your blood pressure. You're going to calm your heartbeat. You're going to de-adrenalize yourself. You're going to become a little more calm. 5 minutes a day, give yourself a 5-minute sabbatical of just simply breathing deep. One of our problems in American society is that we are on a jagged doing cycle. We're always doing, 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 and we're very rarely just being. Breathing will cause you to stop all the doing if not for just a few moments and become a human being with a sense of rest, a sense of centeredness. So today I'm challenging you to deal with your love definitions and your love deficits. If you have some loss in your life and you're going through the five stages of grief, then please, please, please get in touch with where you're at in those stages of grief. But whatever you do today, make sure you've said, I love you to somebody, and make sure you're going to do something beautiful somewhere, because, oh, baby, ugly has been done to death. It's time for you and for me to be the true lovers of all humanity. God bless you and happy trails.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.